Radio free readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Episode 1825, the 25th podcast of 2018, and it is a hot one outside in the American Redoubt. Summer is full on. Love this time of year. It's getting dry, so if you want to get your camping in, get it in quickly. We'll be fighting some fire. We'll be deploying Amron operators to forest fires here before too long. But no, we had some moisture. We are blessed, abundantly blessed in the American Redoubt. I love it. And I just love being around all you guys that I've been able to meet and work with and talk with over the last week. And really getting ready to work with some great patriots next weekend for T-Rex 2018. I'll be talking about that a little bit more in segment 4. So welcome and thank you guys for tuning in across the free zones and outside the wire in occupied territory. You are not forgotten. God bless you guys all for tuning in here. Now, oh, and also, hey, our new listeners that we've picked up by phone. Many listeners are using the call-in phone line. Those of you who have metered limited internet bandwidth, or you don't have the internet. Interestingly enough, there are some folks who do not have internet. And that number is 857-757-1085. You can also find that by going to radiofreeredoubt.com or having a friend of yours go to radiofreeredoubt.com, getting that number for you and allowing you to call in that way. So I've got a lot of stuff to cover. We're going to get down to it. We're going to talk about in the deep state and insurgency and some of the stuff that's going on in our country today. So let's do the news and commentary brought to you by Glenn Tate and the 299 Days book series. The author Glenn Tate has all 10 books out now, including the audiobooks. And this story here, interesting. Russia is considering taking in 15,000 white farmers. This is from citizen.co, .za. South Africa. We've been following this situation here with the promised genocide. Things are really intensifying down there. I am in contact with Simon Roche from the Sightlanders. But a delegation of Boers recently traveled to the world's largest country to consider taking their money and escaping from farm murders and expropriation. The world's largest country, Russia, which remains relatively underpopulated for its size, is reportedly considering welcoming thousands of white South African farmers to its borders to boost its agricultural industry. A group of about 15,000 farmers have reportedly offered their services to the country to go and farm in the South while investing their savings in the country and offering English lessons as well. Well, apparently, according to a Russian news channel, the plan is for the first 30 families to first establish themselves before more follow. Interesting. A delegation of Boers arrived in Stavropol with a proposal to open a migration channel. Interesting. Interesting what's happening. They're saying no to Muslims in Russia. They're saying yes to persecuted farmers who are being run off the land that has been part of their heritage for thousands of years. Hundreds of years. Since they were basically settled in an unoccupied land years ago, they displaced no one to settle there, but they've been displaced now. So this is going to be very interesting. We'll continue to watch this. They said Stavropol has a great climate for farming, and each family is said to be willing to bring at least 1.4 million rubles with them to lease land in Russia and kickstart their farming efforts. Wouldn't that be interesting? Russia's agriculture just explodes, bringing all these farmers, generations of farmers in, removing those generations of farmers. It'd be like Zimbabwe, where they ran all the whites off their farms to expropriate the land, take the land without compensation, which belonged to these families for generations and generations, just saying, we want it. It's ours because of the color of your skin. Interesting. We got some confusion going on, I guess, at the United Nations. They can't get involved here because this time it's the wrong skin color that's being persecuted. So they don't want to help them. Very interesting. So we'll watch this. We'll also post this and all the other stories here at on our highlights and resources posting for this show. Here's something interesting, too. Speaking of Russia, President Trump and Vladimir Putin are scheduled to meet tomorrow. Probably already will have happened, if not even over with, by most of the time that many of you listen to this, because you'll be listening to the downloaded podcast from Monday morning, which will be Monday night. And so this very well could be just getting ready to happen right now. But it's interesting to watch the liberals. Their hair is bursting into flames as they see this. Oh, Trump, Putin's puppet, Trump. I think not. This would be a very interesting meeting to be in on. I would be fascinated by this. Two world leaders, real men, who are strong patriots, who love their country, each of them vowing to place their country's interests first, who are going to work through some of these issues that have caused some division. And I believe these men... are going to be very shrewd. They're going to be extremely their own country first thinking mindset, as they should be. But here's Forbes. Putin and Trump meet on Monday, but the best that can come out of this is a handshake, an arms deal, and better sentiment for Russian stocks, already helped along by rising oil prices. That's from Forbes. Well, they can't be positive about anything, can they? What's this? New York Times. President Trump will speak one-on-one with President Vladimir Putin of Russia this month when they meet in Helsinki, Finland. The administration confirmed, injecting an element of unpredictability and mystery into an encounter that White House advisors describe as a chance. Okay, so why even read on? LA Times. Trump describes the European Union as a foe. This is how they start off the article about President Trump. Our president of the United States of America meeting with Putin. And they start off the article with Trump describes the European Union as, quote, foe, unquote, as he prepares for his first formal summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin, adding fresh disparagement of some of America's closest allies after his disruptive visits to NATO headquarters and the United Kingdom. These guys hate him so badly. But, you know, the establishment, they hated Winston Churchill. He was the right man at the right time in the right place. But anyway, we will watch to see what comes of that. I'm fascinated by that. There's two men that I admire that grew on me. I was skeptical about both of them. Since then, I've grown to respect both of them. I don't put my faith in any man, not even myself. I put my hope is in Christ only, because he's the only one that I've been able to learn that he's the only one that I've been able to trust, even over myself. So I'm not putting these guys on a pedestal. I'm not going to engage in Trump worship or Putin worship by any means, but I have to admire a strong leader, a man who loves his country and is willing to stand against all opposition to look out for the best interests of his country. I remember when the previous president who was in office, the previous president who will not be named, was occupying the White House, how I wished we had a president like Putin at that time. Well, I think we found a pretty good match for a strong patriot. Don't you guys? Well, that's how I feel. Now, this is an encouraging sign. I'm reading to you something that was sent in by a listener. Very astute. He always picks up on some just great, great stories and great insights. I really appreciate these types of resources that are sent in by listeners who are just very astute. I don't know a better word for it. This is an encouraging sign. People are realizing that the public schools have devolved to be little more than centers for indoctrination and antithetical to critical thinking skills, producing loyal subjects dependent on the public largesse. Naturally, the teachers, unions, and all their affiliated think tanks are up in arms about it. And what are we talking about? Well, an article here from the new newsobserver.com saying, this being an election season, there's a lot of talk about improving educational outcomes. Perhaps some enterprising organization or community activist would develop an index on the percentage of K-12 students who opt out of the public school system, correlate that to the socioeconomic health of the state, and track performance over a period of 10 to 20 years. That's exactly what's happening. And the Tennessee Star is covering this, where students are going to traditional public schools. One-fifth of North Carolina students are not going to traditional public schools. One out of five students. The parents, who apparently, hopefully, it appears they are raising their children right by pulling them out of the globalist citizen indoctrination facilities we know as public schools, which are not public schools, they're government schools, with a agenda by the deep state, unquestionable. A very positive trend for the North Carolina people, a word of caution, however, and that is to evaluate the curriculum your home school or private school adopts. A homeschooling cooperative was formed in the small community I relocated from. This is a comment that they posted. The intent being that working parents could still have their children outside of the public school system and they still had some measure of control over what the lessons were that were being taught, or so they thought. In fact, the cooperative was organized and led by a group of dedicated collectivists, great, who in turn adopted a homeschooling curriculum that was right out of the Common Core playbook, completely subverting the original intent. So, this is a good sign that there was a shift in the paradigm for the parents today. One out of five in North Carolina pulling their kids out of the traditional indoctrination facilities, but be careful where you put your kids. You might be thinking you're doing the right thing, and you'll be throwing them, taking them right out of the frying pan, throwing them in the fire. So watch that closely. Now, the World Health, here's one. The World Health Organization has recognized compulsive sexual behavior as a mental disorder, but said Saturday it remained unclear if it was an addiction or on par with gambling. On par with gambling or drug abuse. The contentious term sex addiction has been around for decades, but experts agree over whether this condition exists. So now they apparently, this is what's interesting, the World Health Organization has recognized compulsive sexual behavior, this I'm addicted to sex, as a mental disorder now. But meanwhile, this same pool of people have removed, including the medical psychological industry, have removed mental disorder from being attached to homosexuality, transgenderism. I mean, I don't know how we could get more confused that sexual relations between a man and a woman in a healthy way is normal behavior. And for somebody who just can't get enough of it, you have a mental disorder. But you're okay if you're attracted to the same sex, or if you are a girl and you think you're a boy, or vice versa. So the things that are truly mental disorders, they don't want to say that. It's perfectly normal and healthy, and we need to protect it in the name of inclusiveness. So, I wasn't sure if you guys were aware of that. I'm not sure what you can do with that. There it is. I mean, usually some stuff, you know, I like to bring to you guys, you know, here's something from the headlines, and this is something you can do about it. Well, I'm not sure what you can do about that, except just for your situational awareness that thinking is out there, I guess. From the Sacramento Bee, California's Democratic Party on Saturday endorsed U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein's challenger. Now, she's been incumbent for 26 years, but now she's being replaced. So where did I, oh, here we go. So highlight, now Dianne Feinstein, they are calling a moderate lawmaker. Of course, this is coming out of California, the People's Democratic Republic of, which is nothing of any type of a republic except in name, highlighting the moderate lawmaker's political disconnect with the liberal activists in her home state. Did you catch that? She has a political disconnect. Being labeled as a moderate, there's a disconnect between her and her liberal activists in her home state. In other words, she is so left-wing, rabid anti-gunner, that she's not left-wing enough now that the constituents in California are calling her a moderate. So what does that tell you where we are? Let them break free. Let them encourage them to let them just declare independence from the United States. How's that? It's not America. It's un-American. It's not American. Let them go. So anyway, that's very telling there, I thought. Fox News covered a story here. Facebook is slammed for censorship, for censoring a country group's patriotic song. So Facebook was slammed by the Wes Cook Band Tuesday after Facebook prevented the country group from using the social network's paid tools to promote its song, I Stand for the Flag. Now, Facebook is doing a lot of this, and it's their algorithms. They have their little anti-hate algorithms running all the time, scanning, looking for keywords to prevent it from inadvertently allowing hate to be posted. So things that are patriotic could be extremist, and well, let's flag that and take a closer look. Very interesting. But this is happening a lot. If you guys remember, the 4th of July, Facebook reportedly flagged not just one, but several posts which contained the Declaration of Independence. I don't know if you guys remember that, but Snopes, I went to Snopes. Is it true? Snopes, tell us the truth. Snopes, did this really happen? Well, they couldn't deny it. It really did happen, but they try to play it down. So, like, for example, Snopes is saying, yes, it did happen, but it just briefly for a day. I mean, the next day, Facebook restored the post that had the Declaration of Independence and apologized. So according to The Vindicator, which is this a blog, in an email, the newspaper quoted as follows. It looks like we made a mistake and removed something you posted on Facebook that didn't go against our community standards. They're posting the letter that they got from Facebook. We want to apologize and let you know that we've restored your content and removed any blocks on your account related to this incorrect action. So a spokesman for the social network told them the post was removed by mistake and restored as soon as they looked into it. We process millions of reports each week, and sometimes we get things wrong. So the Vindicator's managing editor, Casey Stinnett, speculated that Facebook's algorithms were alerted by the use of the phrase Indian savages in the excerpt from the Declaration of Independence. So something that a spokesman for the social network confirmed in an email, noting that context is crucial in how Facebook evaluates potential hate speech and bigoted slurs. If somebody said this today, I guess because it's a historical document, they're going to let it go. All right, it's a Declaration of Independence. We're really going to look like jerks if we ban the Declaration of Independence, even though it does have a hate thing, a hate slur in it. We're going to let it slide. Can you imagine if somebody today made reference to Indians, calling them savages? They would flag it in a heartbeat. So they're pushing, but they know when to back off a little bit because the backlash against Facebook for banning the Declaration of Independence wouldn't go over very well. But there is some libertarian website said on Snopes, is quoting them, that phrasing is clearly racist and serves as another example of the American Revolution's mixed legacy, one that won crucial liberties for a certain segment of the population while continuing to deny those same liberties to Native Americans and African slaves. Well, actually, slavery was already on its way out, would have been on its way out without the Civil War. Many of those slaves had been freed, and many of them didn't want to go anywhere because they would have been mistreated, because we still had a mentality against people of different skin colors, like exists all over the world. But that was already changing. That was already changing. And denying the same liberties to Native Americans, I don't know very many places that can have gambling casinos where the Native Americans can, or the really cool fireworks that nobody can have, but the Native Americans can have them. Or free federal money to have houses and cars that many people don't have the privilege of having that stuff. To be able to hunt any time of year, anywhere on your sovereign nation consisting of millions and millions of acres all over the country. We don't get those liberties. They got, I guess, extra privileges. But, hey, it's all history. It's all water under the bridge. No hard feelings. Let's just move along. We're stuck with the Declaration of Independence. It says Indian savages. I mean, is that a racist term? Let's look it up. Merriam-Webster, definition of savage. Let's see. Lacking the restraints normal to civilized human beings. Lacking the restraints normal to civilized human beings. Butchering, scalping, those kind of things. Or, what is this? What's another? Lacking complex or advanced culture. Uncivilized. So the definition number four. The other one means wild and uncultivated, boorish or rude. But I think, I believe, my understanding of what I've read from history, where the Native Americans, or at that time the Indians, were mentioned in writings that I've read, referred to Indians being savages as lacking complex or advanced culture. Did they not lack complex or advanced culture? They were very simple, extremely simple. That's not bad. It's not a bad thing. I love living simply. I would love to just, I have a dream of just being a savage myself. I mean, going into the woods, cutting down trees, building my own cabin, having nothing to do but collect food through the spring and summer, and settling in the fall and just being. I mean, no advanced culture, nothing complex, very simple. Living off the land, I just have this fantasy about doing that. And that's technically, textbook definition is savagery. That's savage living, lacking complex or advanced culture. I kind of like that idea. It's not a bad thing, but, well, today it's just racist to say that. Okay, moving along. I just beat that one up. But I had some thoughts there. I don't know how you guys feel about it. That's just how I felt about it. And I can't help but to go back and celebrate one more time, even though I talked about it yesterday. Trump pardoning the ranchers. The Stephen Hammond and Dwight Hammond, father and son, convicted of arson that burned some federal land. It got out of control. And under terrorism, arson, they were convicted as a gross injustice, but they're free now. Thank the Lord. I love it. I just wanted to mention that one more time because it just felt good to talk about it. All right, we'll be back with 7-2 coming right up. This is Radio Free Redoubt.
This is Matt Shea with your daily news commentary, the way I see it. The 51st state, Liberty's state. There are a lot of myths going around, and one of them is that it's not popular. Born of ignorance, and only a bunch of hicks support the move to split a state. Well, that's funny, because polls with over 10,000 responses, including KXLY, not known as a bastion of conservatism, showed an average of 74% in support. Crosscut, a socialist-leaning publication, said the movement is born of ignorance. They claim that us hicks actually do share the same values, culture, traditions, and heritage as downtown Seattle. Really? We believe the Constitution means what it says, and the Bible is the Word of God. We believe in the sanctity of life, liberty, property, and the ability to defend the same. Time and again, Seattle has rejected and repudiated those ideas. The truth is, we are already two states, and the fact they have to ridicule such a popular idea proves it. At least, that's the way I see it. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for listening. Paid for by the Committee to Elect Matt Shea Republic.
Welcome back to segment two of The Voice of the American Redoubt. The American Redoubt is the safe haven and refuge for God-fearing, liberty-loving patriots who are strategically relocating out of the occupied zones where the statists believe that your children are theirs and your guns are evil and so are you for even thinking of having them. So welcome to the American Redoubt, where the fight continues because they can't stand for liberty, the flame of liberty, to be anywhere. They want to try to extinguish it no matter where it exists. So don't come here thinking you're not going to have to fight for it, because yar. Now, hopefully, yar. Segment two is brought to you by Selkirk Mountain Real Estate. SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com is their website where you can go to learn more about how to get in touch with the great folks, God-fearing, liberty-loving patriots, to help you get strategically relocated to the northern part of the panhandle of Idaho. Check them out, SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com. Also, if you guys haven't checked it out, from the editor of the Gem State Patriot also produced a page I mentioned last week called SocialismToday.info. SocialismToday.info. Now, socialism is communism's baby brother. So very closely related. Socialism is basically a stepping stone toward communism. So you need to be able to recognize it. Does it exist in our culture, in our country, and even the people that we entrust our governance to? Well, yes. And there's documentation proving it. Our institutions, our government mechanisms are full of people who are essentially socialists, are heavily influenced by socialist doctrine, and they might not even realize it. So check it out, socialismtoday.info. Okay, now, this week I watched something with great interest that I normally do not have the time to do, but I watched C-SPAN coverage of this agent Strzok from the FBI, who endured what? It had to have been 9-10 hours. Obviously, I didn't watch the whole thing, but I watched several hours of it as I was trying to multitask, which I'm horrible at. I am usually laser focused on whatever is in front of me, and if it's not right in front of me, it gets ignored. So I was making a feeble attempt of multitasking. So I was watching this investigation and this questioning, the testimony of Agent Strzok. Now, Agent Strzok, for those of you who have not been following it, He was in charge of the investigation, very heavily involved in the investigation under special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into whether or not there was Russian tampering with our elections. Now, before this, during, before, I guess, when Trump was even a candidate, there was this upstanding FBI agent, the highest level of integrity, who was texting with this woman, Lisa Page, who he was having an affair with. And they were basically saying, she says in this text, Trump's never going to be president, right? Right. And he comes back and says, no, he won't. We'll stop it. Now, if you don't think there's a deep state, you are living under a rock, or you're living in the American redoubt and you're checked out from keeping up with current events because, hey, you got your freedom and liberty, so to heck with everyone else. So you don't even pay attention to this stuff. But this stuff is very much affecting us today, whether you feel it or not, and it will definitely affect you tomorrow and in the future, and you will feel it, and so will your children and their children. There is a deep state. There are people who hate, absolutely hate. Now, there are communist revolutionaries, and I talk about them a lot. But really, communist revolutionaries, you know, the hoodie, black wearing mask, the Antifa, those are your street thugs that are your social media warriors trying to shame and destroy people's reputation. And they show up, they pick fights and threaten people and so on. Those are the foot soldiers. They're like the brown shirts, like the youth brigade under the Nazi Germany. Criminals, thugs, punks, basically. Hooligans. And the deep state, those are the people in positions of power. Now, they're not communist revolutionaries, but they are globalists, they are statists, they are elitists. And in these investigations, it's very interesting. Trey Gowdy mentioned something that was like very on point, dead on. And this is from the Fox News article where Trey Gowdy's quote. I remember him saying this because I watched this. He said, Agent Strzok had Hillary Clinton winning the White House before he finished investigating her for mishandling classified information. And he says that, and of course, Gowdy is the chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. And he says, Agent Strzok had Donald Trump impeached before he even started investigating him. That is bias. So the argument was whether or not there was bias. And I say more than a bias. I say an agenda. This is an agenda where this FBI agent speaks very highly about the integrity of the FBI. And he says he can hold personal political views and leave it at the door and not let it affect him in his professional line of work. But can we believe that from a man who's having an affair with a FBI lawyer, female, having an affair with her? And so basically what you can do is say, I can live in any kind of debauchery. I can display a lack of judgment and immoral, unethical behavior. And it's perfectly okay because, hey, that's how I am in my personal life. But when I walk through the door, I am pure professional. That never affects my work. Can you honestly, do you believe people? Now, this is what an experienced FBI career, 20-something years, career FBI agent inside the Beltway in Washington, D.C., in the swamp, is going to sit there with I don't want to say a straight face because he had like this contorted, weird, just twisted face almost the whole time, telling you that he can hold views to say F Trump and he's never going to be president. We aren't going to allow it. And other things that I didn't pull up and have with me, but a whole bunch of things that clearly showed not only a bias, but an agenda. But we're going to believe that he can act perfectly professional when he puts his FBI hat on, which is totally different than his personal life. Well, your personal life is makes up your character, the content of your character, who you are. How can we believe that somebody can't be faithful to their own spouse or who makes statements that this person will never be president, we're not going to allow it, shows clear bias, unethical behavior and statements, in my estimation, that he could also, without blemish, conduct his duties as an FBI agent, investigating Trump for potential Russian interference. So this is really interesting. Overall, the pair, now this is in the messages, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, who were romantically involved, bashed Trump, discussed concerns about being too tough on Hillary Clinton during an investigation into the use of her private email server. And overall, the pair exchanged some 50,000 text messages throughout the presidential election and the first year of Trump's administration, many of them with anti-Trump sentiments. Now, and that's another problem after he's already president. That's your boss. So there's seven takeaways here. One, throughout the hearing, Strzok continuously denied being biased. He said, having worked in the national security for two decades and proudly served in the U.S. Army, those opinions were expressed out of deep patriotism and an unyielding belief in our great American democracy. Well, we don't have a great American democracy. It's what you're trying to turn it into. It's a great American republic. But see, there you are trying to redefine what America is. And those of us who know different and know better know that this is not a democracy. This is a republic. The rule of law, a constitutional rule of law. And your deep patriotism, unyielding belief in our great American republic, should have compelled you to be objective. And did you not have these same sentiments toward the previous president, who truly does and did have communist ties in his upbringing, in his training? So anyway, he says, let me be clear, unequivocally and under oath, not once in my 26 years of defending my nation did my personal opinions impact any official action I took. Is that a believable statement from someone who's responding to questions that he had with the lover he was having an affair with and working to undermine clear testimony here, in my opinion, that they were working to undermine this president? Let's see. He says, we will stop it. He says, he's going to be impeached. He had him impeached before he even became president. And referring to Hillary as, you know, the future president. He also mentioned how he went to one area that apparently is well known for being conservative. And he says, you can smell the Trump supporters. I just went to a Southern Virginia Walmart. I could smell the Trump support. I don't know what we smell. It probably stinks to somebody like that. Goodlatte asked this question. He says, to my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, the Democrats, please replace President Trump's name with your own name in a small sample of things like Mr. Strzok has said. Envision how you would feel if you found out that the chief agent investigating you as a member of Congress was saying F you, your name, that you are, replace Trump with your name. So-and-so is a disaster. Just went to Southern Virginia Walmart. I could smell the Trump support. Or saying that they're going to stop you, referring directly to Mr. Trump's candidacy for president. The FBI is going to stop him. Why? Because, well, he said, because of his insensitive statements that he made about immigrants. I don't buy it. I don't think this FBI agent gives one rip about immigrants. But see, there's this radicalization process that's happening even within the deep state. Now, we're not talking about Antifa. We're talking about something entirely different. Antifa is, you know, your communist revolutionary thugs. Now we're talking about deep state. And it's interesting because this is really subversion. This is subversion. Now, in the military, many of you that were in the Army anyway, I'm not sure what the other branches of the service refer to this, as a training that we had to regularly go through. It was a program they started in the early 90s called SAIDA, Subversion and Espionage Directed Against the U.S. Army. Now, this training continues on even today. You can go to the internet, you can do a research, you can do search on it, a search on SAIDA, S-A-E-D-E-D-A, S-A-E-D-A, SAIDA. Subversion and Espionage Directed Against the U.S. Army. But really, the same methodology applies toward subversion against any part of our government, including the presidency. And so here's some of the training material. I've got a slide where they talk about this pre-radicalization and then identification, then indoctrination, then action. So what this leads to eventually is, at first, there's the pre-radicalization where you're not expected, you don't take any action. Then you grab this identification. So you begin to gravitate toward this, you identify with this group. I'm going to become a Muslim extremist. I'm going to become a, anarchist, revolutionary, communist revolutionary. Or I am going to work to, I really despise this president. You basically start to accept the narrative and even become apathetic toward wrongful action toward something when things are wrong. Let's say, well, I'd love to see Trump impeached. You don't go, hey, wait a minute. He hasn't stood trial for anything yet, right? You're accepting this identification of this position. Then comes the indoctrination, and that's when you begin to turn this, what you accepted, into a conviction. This is where you're ready for action. And then the final phase in the radicalization process is where you are actually taking action. Now, this applies whether you've got some, anti-government, anarchist type of person, extreme right-wing, neo-Nazi, type of person, among the ranks in the military, or it could be an Islamic jihadi who starts off just being, sympathetic toward it, but he didn't take any action. Then he sits under indoctrination and training and guidance, and he becomes more and more radical. And this is where it switches from acceptance to conviction. And that is when you begin to teeter to go over the edge into taking action. So a lot of times, and I've talked about this, like with the Muslim population where we've seen around the world and in the United States where there is Muslim radicalization taking place, there's the moderate or the non-devout Muslims who they wouldn't go in and shoot somebody up. But they don't denounce it when somebody else does it. That's the acceptance. They kind of hang their heads like, I would not do that. No, you wouldn't do that because you're not there yet. But you accept it because you don't denounce it. And then you have the conviction. This is where you begin to sitting under a certain imam, or you begin hearing more and more of this, anti-ISIS or whatever type of anti-American rhetoric. And you begin to kind of really process this, and you begin to adopt this as your own doctrine, the way you feel. And then it becomes a conviction. Then at some point, most people stay right there with this deeply held conviction, but that's when you're ready for taking action. So let me back up to, let's say, even deep state level stuff with an FBI agent or somebody serving in our military or something like that, where they go through this process where they begin to accept this anti-Trump rhetoric, and then they continuously digest this this thinking, this this continuous recirculating narrative that keeps reinforcing Trump's bad, Trump's evil, Trump's a Putin puppet. He's like, you know, and so they're just like a puppet on a string themselves, but they begin to own it. So now you've got an FBI agent very much involved in the deep state. And I mean, look, we're talking about an FBI agent who's willing to project Hillary, thinking that maybe they were being part of a discussion that maybe they were being too hard on Hillary Clinton and referring to her as the future president, while having such biased opinions and attitudes toward the person who would eventually become the president. So then when you have your own words saying we are not going to let him be president, You began moving from conviction, this conviction that is developed in you that you hold, to now action. Now, the radicalization process matrix for Saida, that action is synonymous with terrorism. They're talking about terrorism, but that action doesn't have to be terrorism. It can also be subversion, subverting your government. And we're going to talk about that as well, because it's actually laws. Title 18, Chapter 115 covers treason, sedition, and subversion activities. So we're going to talk about that. And I believe that's what's happening. And this is not an isolated incident. And not everybody in the FBI feels this way. I know many people in the military and in the three-letter agencies, they're politically and even socially very conservative. Many of them are very concerned about what's happening with the deep state. They know it's real. There is division among the ranks in those places. There's people that hold various different views. They tend to gravitate toward one another of like-mindedness. And so anyway, we're going to talk about that when we come back in segment three. So don't go away. This is Radio Free Redoubt.
Are equal.
The world is caught in an era of socialist expansion. Most of the nations are affected, and America is a target. In fact, the number one target of both the socialist and the communist. If we permit our great system to crumble through the apathy of our citizenship, we shall lose not only our freedom, but our prosperity and our still brighter future. Number three on our list of obligations is to understand socialism and all the cunning disguises in which it presents itself to the American people. Our fourth obligation is to understand propaganda techniques as used by both the communist and the socialist. This is a very vitally important need. Thousands of good, loyal Americans have been duped into actually aiding the communist, simply because they did not look carefully before they joined some high-sounding venture, or before they more or less blindly advocated some course of action.
Hi, you guys looking for custom holster needs? I want you to think about Werks Holsters, W-E-R-K-Z. That's Werks.com for your custom holster needs. They make them right here in the American Redoubt with a lifetime guarantee on everything that they make. Go to Werks.com. Segment three here at Radio Free Redoubt is brought to you by Strategic Landscape Design. And they help folks. They have services, a couple of different services. First of all, if you already own property, they will walk that property with you. That's one of the services they provide, where they will help you get the most sustainability out of your property with the strategic landscaping for food production and water procurement and defensibility and security, all of these things. Or if you're looking to buy property beforehand, it's another service they provide, and also helping you secure your water rights. Water wars are the wave of the future, and we're actually in it now. And they do a great job of helping folks secure your water rights, so somebody can't come by and go, surprise, you don't really actually own the water because you didn't fill out this form when you bought this property back whenever you bought it. And so anyway, they help with that as well. Good stuff. Go to strategiclandscapedesign.com. Okay, so subversion is a pretty strong word, or is it? What is subversion? We all kind of know what it is in our head. And I've talked about subversion quite a bit because we have subversion happening. And I can give you an example of it. When you got an FBI agent and an FBI lawyer having a private conversation saying he's not ever going to be president, right? Right. Nod. And the other person says, no, we aren't going to let it happen. These are pretty powerful positions. People in pretty powerful positions, very connected to powerful people in the swamp who are vowing not to allow a certain individual to become president. And I really don't think it has anything to do with candidate Trump's views on immigration. I think that he is, was, and is a huge threat to the deep state. And there's much at stake that he is had vowed to and is disrupting. I believe that. So anyway, hopefully maybe this is a supernatural thing that's been revealed, the supernatural revelation about the subversion that's taking place, how these texts surfaced. The truth is really coming to surface. That's what I think and hope. But let's look at subversion and let's go to good old trusty Merriam-Webster because they're trustworthy, right? They even got since 1828. Oh, long-standing, tried and true tradition. Trusting Merriam-Webster for your dictionary needs since 1828. What could go wrong, right? Well, they are redefining things. It's very interesting. And how they put this up. So let's look at their definition of subversion. The act of subverting. The state of being subverted. Especially a systematic attempt to overthrow or undermine a government or political system by persons working secretly from within. Did you catch that? Merriam-Webster's got it right. A systematic attempt to overthrow or undermine a government or political system by persons working secretly from within. I contend that Hillary Clinton and the previous president, who will not be named, fall into this category of subversion, systematically attempting to undermine our political system by people working secretly within. I believe this. Based on the evidence that I have seen of their behavior, it seems very much systematic. I know those are strong words. Those are strong things to say. But I can base that estimation, and I'm making an estimation, based on open source observations and information that's out there. So, what's interesting, though, is when you read underneath Merriam-Webster's definition of subversion, they have a little paragraph under there that says, did you know? Question mark. Well, let's read this. Subversion is literally the, quote, turning over of something. In the 1950s and 60s, many people worried about communist subversion of the U.S. government, though they often saw subversive activities where none existed. Non-democratic governments often claim that anyone who disagrees with them or joins a demonstration is a subversive. But subversion isn't always quite so serious a matter. When words like weekend, sandwich, job, and camping started being used by the French, for example, some of them began claiming that America was subverting their language. Do you understand what's happening here? This is a beautiful demonstration of the power of words to deceive. And Merriam-Webster allowed this. I believe they allowed this. I believe, this is my gut speaking, and I've learned to trust my gut, that this is not just something they allowed to be placed in here, but this is very strategic and calculated. This is systematic, just like in their definition. When they say, subversion, when they say many people worried about communist subversion of the U.S. government, though they often saw subversive activities where none existed. It's all illusion. You're making it up. It's all in your head. Some people used to be concerned about communist subversion, but oftentimes there's nothing there. It was all made up. So these dirty, rotten little so-and-sos at Merriam-Webster are rapidly losing credibility with me. It seems that they have an agenda. So I'm asking, okay, so what if there was subversion? Is it even a crime? Well, let's see here. Let's go to Cornell University, Title 18, U.S. Code, Chapter 115, covers treason, sedition, and subversive activities. So I'm looking through treason, and it's really kind of difficult to see if subversion really is a crime, because it doesn't say subversion is a crime punishable by XXX. It's not there. It's more implied. And so this is what's difficult. This is why it's difficult to pin subversives down. So let's look at the definitions of subversion, because there are actually several. The problem with defining the term subversion is that there is not a single definition that is universally accepted. Charles Townsend describes subversion as a term so elastic as to be virtually devoid of meaning, and its use does little more than convey the enlarged sense of the vulnerability of modern systems to all kinds of covert assaults. What follows are some of the many attempts to define the term. So, he's basically saying, it's so vague, it's not even a real word. Well, hold on, Mr. Townsend. I take exception. Let's look at some of the other definitions here. Subversion is the undermining or detachment of the loyalties of significant political and social groups within the victimized state and their transference, under ideal conditions, to the symbols and institutions of the aggressor. That's a lot of gobbledygook, isn't it? It's kind of hard to keep up with that. Let's move on. Oh, by the way, who said that? That was Paul Blackstock in 1964 from The Strategy of Subversion, Manipulating the Politics of Other Nations. That was a book. Now, here's another definition. Maybe we should define it. Maybe we should. I'm not sure if we should trust Merriam-Webster to come up with an official definition, but we do have some official definitions. The Department of Defense, Joint Education and Doctrine Division says Dictionary of Military and Associated Terms. They say actions designed to undermine the military, economics, psychological, or political strength or morale of a governing authority. Now, I think the Department of Defense would be a pretty good resource for our government to use as the definition of subversion, wouldn't you say? And we actually have a program, SAID, to report subversion and espionage directed against the U.S. Army. Do we not have I need to find this. I didn't have enough time to research this. If it's something you need to report, I would say that there's something in there stating that government agents would be held to this. It's especially at a criminal level. Subversive activity. Here's another definition. And this comes from the Department of Defense Joint Education and Doctrine Division from 2010. Their Dictionary of Military and Associated Terms also lists subversive activity as anyone lending aid, comfort, and moral support to individuals, groups, or organizations that advocate the overthrow of incumbent governments by force and violence is subversive and is engaged in subversive activity. All willful acts that are intended to be detrimental to the best interests of the government and that do not fall into the categories of treason, sedition, sabotage, or espionage will be placed in the category of subversive activity. Subversive political action. This is a great definition also the Joint Education and Doctrine Division of the Department of Defense. A planned series of activities designed to accomplish political objectives by influencing, dominating, or displacing individuals or groups who are so placed as to affect the decisions and actions of another government. And this one I like the most. This is from Yuri Bezmenov. You guys have heard of him because I've talked about him before. But he wrote a book called Soviet Subversion of Western Society back in 1983. I would love to have met this gentleman. He passed away in 1993. He's one of those kind of people that I've learned to know that over time has become one of those kind of people that I was actually kind of excited about that he was alive at the same time I was alive. He was alive when I was, he died when I was a young man, but I was like, we lived at the same time. I would have loved, I could have met him. We were both on Earth at the same time, and how I would have loved to have sat and just talked with him for an hour, 2 hours. Because if you don't know who that is, he defected from the KGB and he defected to Canada. And he laid it all out. I'll talk about more about him in just a little bit. But he said subversion is a destructive, aggressive activity aimed to destroy the country, nation, or geographical area of an enemy by demoralizing, that means removing your morals, by demoralizing the cultural values and changing the population's perceptions of reality. Ding, 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 ding. I think we have a pretty good definition by an ex-KGB agent who was trained in subversion, specifically trained in subversion. I think a former communist defector who went to the free world to warn us of the communist agenda is a pretty good source for how we should be defining subversion. A destructive, aggressive activity aimed to destroy the country, nation, or geographical area of your enemy by demoralizing the cultural values and changing the population's perception of reality. And there's more here. But there's actually quite a bit more. And I'm going to post this stuff. Actually, you know what? If you go to Wikipedia, there is a ton of information. I love Wikipedia. I don't care what somebody says. Don't trust Wikipedia. You can't. No, there's a lot of good stuff on Wikipedia. I love this. Go to Wikipedia and type in subversion and read. If you don't know if you can trust them or not, then follow all the footnotes and do the cross-reference research at the bottom. There's a ton of it. They provide it. Subversive activity. And it's interesting. Let's look in the United States, and then we're going to we'll take a break. Talk about T-Rex coming up next weekend. But I want to finish talking about a couple of these things. 18 U.S. Code, Chapter 115, covers treason, sedition, and subversive activities. As related above, members of the Communist Party were supposed by legislators to be subversives, especially between the 1917 Russian Revolution and the 1991 dissolution of the Soviet Union. The House of Un-American Activities Committee was formed in 1938 in order to investigate alleged disloyalty and subversive activities on the part of private citizens, public employees, and those organizations suspected of having communist ties. Senator Joseph McCarthy became the most visible public face of a period in which Cold War tensions fueled fears of widespread communist subversion, which didn't really exist. It was just a figment of our imagination, right? There's really no communist subversion, even though we've got defecting KGB agents warning us about the specialized training that they've had specifically designed to subvert the United States system and demoralize the nation. It's just a bunch of to-do about nothing. Okay, in the United Kingdom, there is no crime defined as subversion in British constitutional law. Attempts have been made to introduce definitions, but there's no general consensus among political and legal theorists. Historically, MI5 were entrusted with the legal investigative powers for concerns of threats to national security by Subversion, but in the Security Service Act of 1989, Subversion was not mentioned, and according to the official MI5 website, Subversion is no longer investigated due to a reduced threat as a result of the end of the Cold War and of associated political situations since the 1980s. Did you catch this? MI5 no longer investigates Subversion because of the reduced threat as a result of the end of the Cold War. No more threat, no more communism. There's Subversion's like doesn't even exist anymore because the wall came down. So let's just go on about our business while we see Subversion happening all around us continually. And it's pretty interesting in the United States, continuing on where I left off with this McCarthy, what they call McCarthyism. I think McCarthy had it right. Hunt down the communists. It is an existential threat. It's an existential threat. No question about it. Communism. Just like, in my opinion, jihad, Islamic jihad, is an existential threat. Cultural jihad. But we've had some setbacks. There's several cases. Apthaker versus Secretary of State tested the theory here. In 1964, whether a passport could be disallowed to a communist. Well, Apthaker won. So you cannot disallow a communist to have a passport. Elfbrandt versus Russell involved questions concerning the constitutionality of an Arizona act requiring an oath from state employees. William O. Douglas wrote in a 1966 opinion for a strongly divided court, the majority opinion, that the state could not require the oath and accompanying statutory gloss. So you cannot require a state employee to take an oath. The Warren Court ruled by 5-4 majority in Keishian versus the Board of Regents. That's the State University, New York, I believe, to strike down New York state law that prohibited membership by professors in any organization that advocated the overthrow of the U.S. government. Did you catch this? You cannot pass a law that prohibits membership by professors who advocate the overthrow of the U.S. government or any organization that was held by the regents to be treasonous or seditious. The regents also required teachers and employees to sign an oath that they were not members of the Communist Party. No, can't do that anymore. Now we have open communists serving. So I'm going to post some links. If you guys could look it up yourself. KGB agent Yuri Bezmenov, B-E-Z-M-E-N-O-V. Yuri, that's Y-U-R-I, Bezmenov. There's tons of videos that he's interviewed, and I strongly urge you to watch those interviews and listen to get to know him because he took great risks to warn us about the communist plan to subvert and destroy America. So I've got several, I've got more than I have time to really get into. There we go. I'm just going to call it good right there. Maybe we'll save it for next Saturday on KTW. How's that? Okay, let's come back with segment four. We're going to talk briefly about the T-Rex 2018 nationwide grid down emergency communications exercise, and then we'll wrap it all up. So stick around. This is Radio Free Redoubt. We'll be right back. Hi, everyone. This is John Jacob Schmidt here to tell you about the 299 Days book series by lawyer and author Glenn Tate. Follow him through his real-life story of transitioning from middle-aged, unprepared suburbanite to full-blown prepper, tactical team member, and provider and protector of his family. Then let Glenn take you on a wild ride through the collapse, community building, resistance against a corrupt system, and the rebirth of a new one. Go to 299days.com to learn more. Back, segment four here at Radio Free Redoubt. I want to also mention our sponsor for this segment, Riverfront Suites. Go to riverfrontsuites.com. Beautiful little place to lay your head on the St. Joe River there, right on the banks of the St. Joe River. You don't lay your head on the St. Joe River. The Riverfront Suites is a really neat little place in St. Mary's, Idaho. It's right on the St. Joe River, the south end of the Coeur d'Alene Lake. Just a beautiful little place, especially this time of year. But, yeah, check them out and, thank them also when you talk to them for, thank them for supporting Radio Free Redoubt. That's riverfrontsuites.com. Okay. Now, before I get into, the T-Rex stuff, I want to talk about that. It's coming up this week, but I wanted to finish up. There's a couple of things I meant to mention and I did not in the last segment or the segment two, talking about, FBI agent Strzok. I'm going to quote something that he said to, I guess I would say, in an attempt, in my estimation, this is an attempt by him to justify his actions and his statements. But he says, and I quote, "The honest truth is that Russian interference in our elections," when asked why he had, you know, basically impeached Trump before he even became president, in his mind, and, you know, according to his statements, such an evil, vile person that must be pursued relentlessly because of his ties to Russia, which, of course, they can't make any connections to Russian interference with, tied to Trump. But anyway, we'll let the facts fall wherever they fall. And you know what? If President Trump did collude with the Russians to alter the elections, then if a crime was committed, then he needs to be held accountable for it. So we'll see. So far, it seems like a witch hunt. But if he broke the law, he broke the law. I'm hoping that that will be revealed. But anyway, I want to go back to Agent Strzok's comments. He said, "But the honest truth is that Russian interference in our elections constitutes a grave attack on our democracy." False. It's a republic. We have a limited democratic process. But I digress. "Most disturbingly, it has been wildly successful," he says, "sowing discord in our nation and shaking faith in our institutions." You getting this? He says, "The honest truth is that Russian interference in our elections constitutes a grave attack, and it sows discord on our nation and shaking faith in our institutions. I have the utmost respect for Congress's oversight role, but I truly believe that today's hearing is just another victory notch in Putin's belt and another milestone in our enemy's campaign to tear America apart," Strzok said. "As someone who loves this country and cherishes its ideals, it is profoundly painful to watch and even worse to play a part in." Okay, what I meant to mention earlier is that if he really does believe that the FBI needs to go after an enemy, and if there was another notch in somebody's belt, it would be George Soros' belt. And it is George Soros who's been sowing discord in our nation and shaking the faith in our institutions and interfering with elections. The country of Hungary, the country of Israel, many people in Ireland, the United States, clearly identified, and the government of Hungary has officially called Soros a threat. The Hungarian government launched a campaign that vilifies billionaire investor George Soros as a threat to national security. There is truly the national security threat. Why, Agent Strzok, do you not have such an interest in George Soros, who truly is doing precisely what you say, sowing discord in our nation and shaking faith in our institutions, interfering with our elections? That there is a grave attack on our republic. But there just doesn't seem to be a priority for him, does it? All right, now quickly. T-Rex, that's the Teotihuacan Readiness Exercise of 2018. Now, if you're new, haven't been around, or maybe not a survival blog follower, or Rural Revolution, or Enola Gay's blog, any of those, and then Teotihuacan might be a new term for you. That is an acronym for, this stands for, the end of the world as we know it. Teotihuacan. And so it is basically just a way of saying, you know, the SHTF. Stuff hits the fan. Not the end of the world, but a major catastrophic event or series of events that leads to our socio-political landscape changing in a way that it will not ever be the same again. Like what happened maybe in Zimbabwe, or the Weimar Republic in Germany, or Venezuela today, and many, many other examples. So it doesn't necessarily mean zombie apocalypse. It just means the end of the world as we know it. There is a shift, or socio-political or economic system, or all three, have shifted. Usually because of some catastrophic event. We're looking at economic failure potentially in the future. We're looking at the EMP or a cyber attack type of threat, which could very seriously and permanently alter the things that we've always known to be would be different. Doesn't mean there wouldn't be a rebuilding. In fact, here at Radio Free Redoubt, the silver lining, the positive message that we have is that there will always and always has been a rebuilding afterward. There always will be, even when the end of the world does come and Christ returns and the earth is destroyed, it's going to be rebuilt again. There's always a rebuilding. So that's what I tend to focus on, is the rebuilding. The event, whatever it might be, Teotihuacan, we just call it Teotihuacan because we don't know what it will be, whatever it is a wiping of the slate. And it is the beginning of a new era, the end of an old era. And there's a transformation that takes place. There's a renewal. There's a rebuilding. We want to be able to have a part in that rebuilding. And we can't do that without being able to communicate with one another and share information to stay informed, to make informed decisions, and to help inform others, and to also support our leadership, elected officials, community leaders, and other influential leaders in being able to communicate and coordinate with one another in that rebuilding process. Now, there are enough threats out there that indicate that our fragile telecommunications infrastructure could be disrupted and likely will in many of these scenarios. So we practice in a nationwide network called AMRON, the American Redoubt Radio Operators Network, a network of thousands of members, hundreds of AMRON Corps members, and there are mutual assistance groups, churches, communities. The Ares Races operators are in AMRON, the Military Amateur Radio Service, the militias, and just all kinds of search and rescue groups, citizens, private citizens, groups, retreat groups. All these folks make up AMRON. Or AMRON is made up of people from all of these different backgrounds. And we do several trainings normally a year. But this year, we're just doing one. And I have many things to do. I'm behind. And I'm behind on many things this year. It's been a challenging year. So we are doing a major exercise this week. And that's T-Rex 2018. That'll be from Friday through Sunday. And If you go to amron.com, you can learn more about emergency communications and how we go about doing that. Hopefully you guys have been practicing all along. But what I wanted to share with you is just a little bit about what's going to be happening this weekend. Now, this is a carryover from an Amron Core exercise that took place called Rabid Rudolph. Now, Operation Rabid Rudolph was the training exercise that these are all scenario based exercises, completely made up. We're not projecting anything that might happen or anything, but we're just choosing a scenario. In this scenario, this was a biological event where there was a virus that was affected animals and that has jumped now to the human population. It's morphed. And that's what T-Rex is going to be based on. Last year, it was a earthquake, major earthquake scenario. The year before that, it was a cyber attack. And then before that, it was economic collapse. So this year, we're running this off of a biohazard emergency with this virus. So I want to read to you, there's been training going on. And last night, I received over the airwaves a text, a message in a form that comes with these Amron custom forms many of you are all familiar with. And this is how it reads. All of our exercises, all of our training messages having to do with the scenario, all the operators know to proceed and end the message with exercise, exercise, exercise. To let everyone listening, this isn't real. This is only a training exercise. So people don't tune in and freak out when they hear of all the chaos that's going on. Is only a made-up scenario. And so you begin and end, and this begins with exercise, exercise, exercise. Special advisory statement. Now this, you could only get over the airwaves yesterday, and this would also be put out Tuesday as well in pre-training exercises that are taking place leading up to T-Rex. So it'll be a grid-down situation. And this week, we're going to be posting updates, T-Rex updates, leading up to the event. Starting tomorrow afternoon, we'll begin posting articles or postings up on Amron.com. And just go look for the most recent posting, and you will see, so you'll begin to see traffic that's related to this until we go grid down. Then the only way you'll be able to get information is on shortwave radio or ham radio. And that information is going to be all posted on Amron.com. People have been practicing all year. They know what to do. So here is the special advisory statement that was put out yesterday, available only if you have amateur radio or a shortwave radio with single sideband. And this is what it says. Special advisory statement. In a special bulletin transmitted on television and radio, officials from the CDC, DHS, HHS, and FEMA issued the following statement. Quote, our research has concluded that we are entering the 90 to 100 day window where symptoms of disease X, a prion-based disease, may be dramatically expanding based on extrapolation from the number of initial cases seen in April and May. In fact, we are seeing an increasing number of cases nationwide bearing this out. With this in mind, we have issued the following directives. 1. Do not travel beyond your local community and do so only when absolutely necessary. TSA, FEMA, and members of the National Guard are conducting screenings at all transportation hubs and airports. Be advised, if you have to travel, expect long waits and mandatory screening. Number 2, avoid large gatherings such as sporting events, concerts, and malls. Number 3, if you have symptoms, do not go to the hospital, physician's office, or the ER. Call your local public health department and report your symptoms to them. Follow their instructions. The CDC, USAMRIID, and researchers are working tirelessly to contain this disease and put mitigation measures in place. Please remain calm and follow the instructions of government officials. Information is being disseminated to local health officials now. End of message. and then exercise, exercise, exercise. So that is a typical message. It comes in a text. And we have digital software that's free to download. We operate on our computers along with our ham radios to be able to send texts and text messages and emails back and forth throughout the network across the United States. So we'll be following the signals operating instructions, version 3. And we did not get the supplemental that's in process right now, but the SOI version 3 is fully functional. It will be even after the next versions, previous subsequent versions. The signals operating instructions for version 3 and later, when the later versions are released, will all work. One will not make the other one obsolete and unusable. So for T-Rex 2018, version 3 of the SOI is what you want to use to tune in. Net control stations and the signals centers are getting all the final instructions this week in the next 24 to 48 hours, those who have not already gotten those. So we're excited. We're looking forward to it. And I can't say enough how proud I am of the volunteers who have worked tirelessly to put this exercise together largely in my absence with dealing with just the things that I've been dealing with. And without them, there would not be a T-Rex 2018. And I am very grateful, more than I can even say in words. They are just the most amazing people that I've ever had the privilege to work with. And I don't say that lightly. I don't know how to say it in a more meaningful way, but they're just very dear people to me. They're very dedicated. They believe in the mission. They believe in helping their fellow countrymen in times of need. So just wonderful. So I look forward to seeing you guys on the air this next week. We're going to pre-record next Saturday's show. And then next Sunday, coming off of T-Rex, it will be a kind of a light show because it's going to be pretty chaotic, redeploying back to the Redoubt Ranch from our deployment site. And then I will be briefing you guys on the exercise and be talking about other stuff too. So anyway, you guys have a blessed week. Thank you all for being out there. Thank you for your prayers and thank you for your support, your letters of encouragement. I'm very grateful. I'm a very, very blessed person and I don't take any of that lightly. So I appreciate all of you. All right. God bless. You have a great week. Hopefully you can train and hopefully we'll see you on the air. This is John Jacob Schmidt, and this is the voice of the American Redoubt. Good night.